Good evening, brothers and sisters and young people. Well, I feel like the Queen of Sheba. I know I don't look like it. But the Queen of Sheba heard about Solomon. And then she went to see. And she said, "Of half of all your greatness was not told me." I talked about Pam's cooking this morning. And now I have been. And I can tell you the half of what was told me is not, it's better than that. Thank you. We thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. I'm going to ask you to cooperate with me this evening as we do some things together. We're going to talk about control and balance. And so if you'll enter into it with me, it'll help us all remember the lessons we want to take home with us. Or would you all just pick up your hand and make a tight fist? Make a fist as tight as you can and squeeze it as hard as you can and hold it. And if you do this long enough, your arm will begin to ache. Now, a fist in this position is not good for many useful or peaceful purposes. Now, would you let go and just drop it to your side and shake it and let it flop around? Now, that kind of hand can't do very much either, can it? Now, please bring it up in front of you and manipulate it. Just let it, see how you can move it around and do what you want to with it. This hand is completely in your control, and whatever you tell the fingers to do, that's what they do. Thank you. Solomon told us, "Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might." The kind of control we're talking about tonight could be compared to good muscle tone. The kind of control that we want to get over our life and over our time. Not the tight-fisted thing. Too tight, compulsive, restrained, obsessive. On the other hand, not too loose, apathetic, indifferent, lazy. We need to get balance in our life. And to some degree, all of us are unbalanced in some way or another. And many people with tremendous talent never amount to anything, because they're not balanced. A lot of smart people do not succeed in this life, alone in the kingdom. A lot of people are going to be in the kingdom that aren't terribly smart. There's going to be a lot of brilliant people going to be cast aside because they were unbalanced. Now we want to learn how to be balanced in our life. A person who's had a stroke, we have a brother in our meeting, so pitiful. He was a vibrant brother, and he's had a stroke now, and he can't make his hand or his foot do what he wants it to do. And he just won't do it. I mean, he knows what he wants it to do, but it won't. And the person was palsy. I can't stop shaking. We have a dear, dear brother we're terribly fond of, Brother Eugene Turner. I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, but he's a very famous brother in the States. He's an older brother now. And he just shakes like this all the time. And his wife says, "I can tell when he goes to sleep, because he stops shaking. As he wakes up, he starts. And he has no control over his hand. But you do. No one here, I don't think, in this room has had these afflictions. Doesn't mean none of us ever will. Of these brethren weren't always this way, but that's the way they are now. So we need to learn how to get control of our life and be balanced. In order to do that, we need to be organized. But there are some people who are unbalanced in their organization. Everything about them is neat as a pin. They're always getting ready to do something great. But they're so busy getting ready, they never have time to do it. I went into the church business about 35 years ago. And at the same time, I quit my job with three little kids and went into business. A young mortician in our town came into the business as well. And we were struggling young men together. And our guests were sat beside each other. And he was so anxious to be organized that he got his guests pitched just right. We had no customers. We had no files. We didn't have anything to do. But he got everything right, and his parents bought him a beautiful desk set, and he had a pad, and he took his rate book, and he put tabs on every page so he could flip from page to page. And I had three kids to feed, and I just went out pounding on doors, and you want to buy insurance? And I'd come back at night, and he'd show me how he picked up another rate page. And I said, well, did you go out today? Oh, no, but that's how I'm getting ready. And he was so busy getting ready, he never sold anything. I think maybe he wasn't used to having customers that talked back. He had been a mortician prior to that. But at any rate, he failed in the business. Because he was so organized, he never did anything. Now that's being unbalanced in organizations. And there are people like that. Sometimes people in your pages can be like that. The other side of the coin is the person who is so disorganized, so unorganized, they just run, but they never accomplish anything because they never thought anything ahead. And again, that's an extreme which we ought to avoid. The balanced person is somewhere in between those two. We need to get our priorities straight. See, some people are very good at one thing, but not at something else. And it takes sometimes the both. I give you a simple, crazy little story. But this was this expert golfer. And so they challenged this fine golfer to a golf match with a gorilla. And this gorilla could hit a ball a country mile. So they came up to the first tee, and the good golfer made his first shot right down the fairway, a couple of hundred yards, a good shot. The gorilla comes up, whacks the ball, lands right on the green. And this fellow says, oh boy, I'm really in for it. I mean, this gorilla outdrove him twice as much. So he goes up to his ball, and he hits a couple more shots, and he's on the green. He's on the green in three, and the eighth's on the green in one. The gorilla comes up to the ball, he hits the ball another 20 miles. So you see, there's a time to hit the ball a long ways, and there's a time to hit the ball a little ways. And a good golfer knows when to putt, and he knows when to drive. But the gorilla just drove. And there are people like that. They just keep on driving when the time has come to putt. I'm going to give you a silly example of how to be unbalanced. You're sitting at the kitchen table. You've just put a piece of toast in the toaster. You have toasters that pop up on the sun? Well, I haven't seen one. I haven't been here long enough to see one. And you have your coffee pot is perking, and it's going to be a delicious cup of coffee in a minute. You're looking forward to having a toast with jelly or jam or whatever it is you put on it. I'm not sure what we call it, jelly and jam, but I think they're different things to you. Jello, I think, is your jam, is it? Or your jelly? Anyway, the sweet stuff is marmalade. How's that? We'll use marmalade, all right? And just as the toaster pops up the toast, you look up and you see that the kitchen curtains are on fire. Now, what's the best possible use of your time? Take your toast and butter it and put the marmalade on it and sip the coffee or put out the fire. It's a pretty easy decision to make, isn't it? Most of the choices that we have to make in life are not quite that simple. Regardless of whether your coffee is ready and your toast is ready, you better do something about those curtains or you won't have a house. Well, sometimes we don't use what is such obvious good judgment in this instance, in doing the right thing at the right time. Some of us do the right thing at the wrong time, or we do the wrong thing at the right time. Solomon said there is a time and place for all things, and the balanced person knows when to do what. So again, we said this before, but the children of this world, said the Lord Jesus, are wiser in their generation than the children of light. And sometimes the people in the world are more conscientious in achieving their goals, which are worldly goals, than we as Christadelphians are in achieving the goal of the kingdom of God. You can learn a great deal simply by studying the success of other people in the world and then applying their principles to the things of the truth. Consider the professional photographer. We all see the results in magazines and wherever you go of the skills of a professional photographer. And we wonder how he gets such good pictures. Well, I'll tell you how he does it. He takes more pictures than does the amateur. When I'm going to take a picture, I put the camera up and I just hit it and hope it comes out. But not the professional photographer. He'll shoot several rolls of film when I'm shooting one or two. And he has a lot of bad pictures too. But he has so many pictures, you never see his bad ones because he's a pro. He throws them away. And the ones you see are outstanding. But he's taken many, many pictures in order to get to that point. And so we need to do a thing over and over sometimes in order to get it down. I don't think we practice. We were discussing at dinner tonight about public speaking. And we don't have paid ministry. Rightly so. But why don't we do the best we can with what we have? How many of our brethren take courses in how to do the best they can with it? I mean, if you were a professional golfer, you would take golf lessons. If you were a professional tennis player, you would take tennis lessons. If you want to become a dentist or an eye doctor or whatever, you take lessons. You learn how to do the best you can. And why don't we, if our job is to preach the truth, why don't we learn how to do it? We're not all ever going to be all the same, but we all could do better than we are doing. So let's practice. Let's learn whatever it is. You see, one of the problems, I guess, I'm sure some public speakers don't know this, but your audience is constantly leaving you. None of you have listened to me all the time. Well, I don't blame you. I understand that. But no audience ever can listen to a speaker nonstop, because you tune into him and then you tune out, and you come in and some of you tune out and never come back. And some speakers get up and they'll, and you turn him off and you finally sit down and you say, oh, it's over, it's good. And then we all get up and say, oh, that was wonderful. But if you know that your audience is leaving you, try to get them back. And so little stories and things get you back. And then while I got you, I got to try to make a point quick because I'm going to lose you again. And then I see you're gone, I watch your eyes glaze over, and I try to get you back again. But whatever we are doing, let's do it with the best of our ability. And try to help people to remember it, because I have to tell you a story on me. We have fraternal gatherings. And at our fraternal gatherings, we have the ecclesia putting on the fraternal gathering always invites a speaker from a ecclesia other than their own. You never have your own brother at the fraternal gathering. And so we went to a fraternal gathering once at ecclesia, and the brother got up and he gave a marvelous education. He's one of our top speakers. And he gave a really fine education, and there was a lot of people there afterwards, and you mill around and they serve you a meal, and after it was all over, we just didn't see each other. So a year later, I'm at the same fraternal gathering with a different speaker. And this time, we're standing in a little circle waiting for the dinner to be served, and I'm in the circle with this same brother that I had not seen for a year, because we don't always see each other all the time when we're in various occasions. And I said to him, I said, oh, you know, I haven't seen you since the same time last year. And I said, you gave a fine exhortation last year. I said, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I want to thank you for it. Another brother that knows me real well, and we kind of have a bantering back and forth in good fun, good nature. He said to me, what do you say, Bob? What do you say? All I can remember was I liked it. And I was embarrassed. But this fellow loves to embarrass me. I mean, he worked at doing that. But the point is, we not only want to make our points, but we want you to take them home with you. Because if you don't remember what was said, then when you get home, you say, well, that was fun. We had a nice time. What did he say? I remember Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge was supposed to be they called him Silent Cal, because he almost never said anything. And so he came back from church once, and they said, well, did you enjoy the sermon? And he says, yep. He says, what did the preacher talk about? He said, sin. He said, what did he say about sin? He said, he's against it. So, we need to remember what we've done here this week. Because if we don't, that's why the Bible verses, and some of you are memorizing every one of them, and we're so pleased. All of you could be. I wonder if we call any of you up and ask you to recite one, if you'd be able to do so. Don't tell me you don't have time. You have all the time there is. What did you do all night? But you know, one way to memorize Bible verses is to take them to bed with you, literally. And take a torch and shine your torch on your Bible verse and say it over two or three times just before you go to sleep, and then put your torch under the pillow and put your pillow under there. It may get rumpled. I'll give you a new wiring one if it gets messed up. And then if you wake up in the night, get your torch out and look at it again. Put it back in. But what happens is you're turning over to your subconscious mind, which never sleeps. And you take with your conscious mind, you put it in your conscious mind. Then you tell your conscious mind, there's only your subconscious mind to work on that verse while you're asleep. When you wake up, you remember a lot of it. You'd be amazed how much. You don't believe that. Take one of the longer verses and just try it tonight. Go to bed with it and see how much more you know in the morning. If you sleep as old as Alf, you'll know it all. Now, we need to learn how to plan our time. The fuzzy time planner misses his mark entirely, because he doesn't spend enough time planning his time. The serious time planner takes a lot of different shots at it, like the photographer. He approaches it from different angles. He tries different techniques and finds the one that works. Because, brothers and sisters, if we don't know where we're going, we're not going to get there. Again, you can learn lessons from fairy tales. There's the Alice in Wonderland fairy tale, and Alice is lost. And she comes to the shelter cat, and she says, can you tell me which way to go? And the cat says, which road to go? The cat says, who do you want to go? She says, well, it doesn't really matter. She says, then any road will do. And I like that story because it ties into the next one. This is about the fellow who was lost. And he pulls up to an intersection. There's several roads there. And there's a little boy sitting on the fence. And the man pulls up and the boy's just sitting there. And he says, son, he says, I'm totally lost. He says, can you tell me which road to take? How do I get the dirt? Can you know how I can get the Durban from here? He says, nope. He says, well, what road could you tell me to take if I went to East London? I don't know. Well, what about Richards Bay? Which way is that? I don't know. Do you really road grade to Joburg? I don't know. The man is kind of disgusted. He looks at the boy and says, well, you don't know much, do you? The boy says, I know I ain't lost. But he was. You see, if you don't know how to get anywhere from where you are, you're just lost and don't know it. So we better know how to get to the kingdom. Because if you don't know the route to get there, and if you don't know that's where you're going, like in Alice in Wonderland, then any road will do. But if you know where you want to go and your goal is the kingdom of God, then you better find out what roads take you there, and then you better get going on those roads, because you can't travel sitting down. Oh, you can in a car, I know, but some of you were stuck in the mud this afternoon. I've been stuck in the mud. We went to baptize, my father went to baptize some people out in the middle of West Texas once. We went on the dirt road down to this place and got hopelessly stuck in the mud, and they had to come and pull us out with mules. They didn't even have another car to do it. So I know what it's like to be stuck in the mud. You're not going anywhere when you're stuck in the mud, so you were wise to get help, and thank goodness we did. Where are you going in life? Are we moving in the right direction? Brother Anthony is an experienced pilot. Have you ever heard of a pilot getting in an airplane and taking off without filing a flight plan? Not only do they know where they're going, but they've written it down and they've left their route and their intentions with the control tower of the airport from which they took off. And they set their compass and they know where they're going. Everyone who came here to White Mountain had a goal. Our goal was to come to the Bible school. When you got in your car, wherever you started out from, did you say, well, any road will do? No, you either knew the way or you got out a map and you charted your course. Otherwise, you would not be here now. Well, let's be as sensible in our journey toward the kingdom as we are in coming to the Bible school. Because no one's going to get into the kingdom who didn't file a flight plan, who didn't chart a course, who didn't set their face steadfastly as Jesus did to go up to Jerusalem. He knew where he was going, and he was going to die. And God will not be pleased with us if we just drift along. Because as we said before, you won't just go along for the ride and end up in the kingdom. So what are your lifetime goals? What do you want to achieve in this life? Are you making progress toward your goals? Can you improve on your progress? The goal of this class is to help you to improve. We all have room for improvement. To help you keep your balance as you move forward towards the most important goal there is, the kingdom of God. It's amazing how many people do not have well-defined goals in their life. And every success manual you read anywhere tells you you must do this in order not only to be successful, just to be happy, just to be contented, to feel complete. Like the person who's drifting along is not even happy, even if they're where they like to be. Some people look like the little boy. He thought he wasn't lost, and he didn't even know that he was, because he didn't know where anything was. And so we want to keep our balance as we move forward. It works for the world. It'll work for us. We should be as diligent in our walk to the kingdom as they are in their walk to these goals. And they put us to shame. There are people in this area who are totally dedicated to whatever it is they want to be. And they achieve it because they did it intelligently. And why would we think that we can just get baptized and sit back and say, well, now I'm in the church. Jesus come. He's watching us. He's wanting to see what we're doing with our time. Are we making the best possible use of it? Or are we just wasting it? Are you moving? For example, right now, end of June, isn't it? And another few days, this year will be exactly one half over. Are you closer to God at the end of June than you were at the beginning of January, 6 months later, before? You can't chart your course and see a difference in just 1 or 2 days. But in the last 6 months, do you understand certain scriptures now that you didn't understand 6 months ago? Have you served the Lord in such a way that you feel closer to God now than you did 6 months ago? I mean, these are questions I'm wanting you to answer. They're rhetorical questions, but I want your answer to you. I don't want to know the answer. It's none of my business what you answer. But if you don't like the answer you're giving, then the next 6 months going to be different. Or they can be if we decide this week to make it so. And if we don't, they won't be. And so we will, you know, I've known people who have had 20 years experience at a job. And I've known people who have had 1 year's experience 20 times in the job. Are you grown? Can you see your spiritual growth over the last, say, just 6 months? Now, we need to help each other. And that's what Bible schools are all about. We've come here to assist each other in our walk. And we can do that. Father says, iron sharpeneth iron. So a man sharpeneth the countenance of his face. You have an iron instrument, and it's dull. And you have another iron instrument, and it's dull. And you're them together, and pretty soon you got two sharp instruments when you had none. And an instrument can't sharpen itself sometimes. We need the association of each other. We need to help each other. Not just this week at Bible school, but when we go back to where we came from. Can you decide that you are going to be a helper to others? And the more you help others, the more you help yourself. The more love you give, the more love you get. If you ever see somebody who doesn't have a smile, give them one of yours. And see if you ever run out. You can give away smiles all day long. At the end of the day, you're just full of smiles. The more you give, the more you have. Jesus told us that. He told us parables about that. The pounds and the talents. They double those. Except the fellow who only had one, but you're not going to get mine. So he went and buried it. He was not a thief. He was not an embezzler. He gave Jesus back exactly what Jesus gave him. Was Jesus happy? Well, thank you for giving me back the pound I gave you. That's nice. Thou wicked and slothful servant. If you're not increasing your talent, you're not increasing your pound. And you do it by giving it away. That was the challenge that God gave to them in Malachi. He says, just try and test me. See what I'll do. Bring your tithe. We're not on the subject of tithing, but I hope you do. I think that's the least we should do. You're robbing God. If you can't rob God. You ever seen somebody take a gun and say, God, this is a stick-up. Will a man rob God? God says, yes, he can. You robbed me. Oh, when have we robbed you? How could you rob God for anything? Well, you robbed me in tithes and offerings. You're cursed with a curse. You robbed me, even this whole nation. Just try it out. Bring me your tithes. This is not just money, but it includes money. Bring your tithes into the storehouse that there may be meat in mine house. And prove it. Just test it and see what happens, he said. I'll open the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing upon you. There will be a new room enough to receive it. You can't believe what God will do for you if you put him first in your life. But very few people do. You save your life, you lose it. You lose your life for his sake. You find it. And that's true now, and it's true in the age to come. Gold will help us keep our balance. Now, we like the little story about the boys who were playing out in a field and they found an abandoned railroad track. I don't know if you were like that, but I know when I was a little boy, we used to like to try to walk on the rail. And there's two rails there, and you know, you walk like this, you can walk on the rail, and pretty soon you lose your balance and fall off. And all the little fellas were, don't worry, I'm not going too soon. They were all trying to walk on the rail, and nobody could do it very far. Then two little guys got off together, and they started whispering to each other. And they came back to the group and they said, we can walk that rail all the way and not fall off. And little boys are apt to say, they said, oh yeah. through this. So Mark, would you come up and help me? Mark doesn't know this. I didn't even ask him for permission. So Mark and I, you get on one rail, and I'll get on the other, and we'll walk together, and we can go the whole way. Thank you. Now, Mark didn't pick me up and carry me. I didn't pick up Mark and carry him. All we did was extend a hand and balance each other. What neither one of us could do alone, we both could do together. Stick out your hand and hold a brother or sister's hand, and together we can do it. Don't try to do it by yourself. Not when you can reach out your hand and steady another. And while you're steadying him, he's steadying you. You're both better off because you have each other. In the meeting, put out your hand to one another. That's the lesson to learn from that. Well, what are your lifetime goals? I'm kicking myself that I didn't announce this morning, but do all of you have the ability at the moment to write? You have a piece of paper and a writing instrument on you, because you're going to need it. If you don't have it, I hope someone else can help you. We're going to need paper and pencil for this operation. I apologize for not warning you in advance. Thank you, Ralph. There's a man that comes prepared. Oh, there's paper in abundance there in the front rows. Anyone that's missing a piece of paper, do you have a writing instrument? Does anybody need a writing instrument? I got a couple of things. I don't have a lot, but anybody missing a pen? Here's another one, huh? That's got a. This is pointless. Okay. This is what you call planning ahead. Talking about planning, and you can see, incidentally, brothers and sisters, we're saying some sometimes hard things this week, and I just want you to know this. I know you do know that I know it, but I want to remind you that I do know that I do know it. When I point my finger at you, and I've been pointing my fingers this week, you know what is happening? There's three pointing at me. So everything that I'm saying to you applies to me three times. I don't tell you to do these things because I have it all perfect. I'm saying, look, we're in this together. And like Mark helping me, we're extending our hands to one another. And it's right that we point our fingers sometimes to help a person. Brother Barry pointed a finger at me today to help me out and corrected me on something I said yesterday. I thank him for it. So none of us are perfect. But we're trying. And so don't be offended if I point my finger at you. I realize that whatever I'm saying, the fact I know this is the right thing to do doesn't mean that I always do it. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't say what we ought to do. Even if we're, I mean, if you only want perfect people to get up and speak, you're going to have an itchy platform all the time. So now that you're ready, I appreciate this. Thank you for all those who contributed with paper and pens. What I want you to take on the top of this paper, I want you to write down this little sentence. It's not a sentence, it's a question mark. What are my lifetime goals? Question mark. What are my lifetime goals? Now, while you're writing that, I want to explain the difference between a goal and an activity. You cannot do a goal. You do an activity. But the activity should help us arrive at our goals. Without well-defined goals, we have a lot of activity and burn up a lot of energy and still not have anything to show for it. I'll give you another little story to illustrate it. It has to do with two hunters that were out hunting deer. And they shot the biggest buck they had ever seen. It had great big antlers. They were thrilled with this buck that they'd gotten. And so the buck fell that way, and the road in the car was this way. So these two said, well, we got to get this buck back to the car, back to the road, and put up on the roof. don't know if you do that here, but down the way when they hunt deer, they usually tie it down on the roof of the car to bring it home. So each hunter got a hold of a rear leg, and they start pulling this deer toward the road. And of course, the fur goes the other way. And they were having an awful struggle. I mean, they could hardly budge it. It was so big. Another hunter came by and said, "My, that is a beautiful buck you've got. Congratulations." And he said, "Fellas, you know, if you would go around to the other end and pull it by the horn, pull it with the head, the fur is going this way. You can pull it a lot easier if you just pull it by the head instead of by the back feet." Well, he said, "Thank you very much." So they went around to the head and they started pulling. And the one hunter said, "Boy, this is really going a lot better, isn't it?" And he says, "Yeah, but we're getting further away from the car all the time." So a lot of activity, all the time they're getting further away from their goal, which is to get the deer to the car. Sometimes we lose sight of our goal, and we do a lot of huffing and puffing, and the more we huff and puff, the further we are away from the kingdom instead of the closer we are to it. So it's important that we keep our goals firmly in mind. For example, if you want to be in the kingdom is a goal. An activity would certainly be getting baptized, wouldn't it? How could you possibly expect God to put you into the kingdom if you wouldn't do one of the things he asked you to do, which is to be baptized? So right now we're talking about not activities, but goals. And then it's so easy to fill in the activities that you could do in order to achieve the goal. Once you know where you're going, you then need to know what route to take in order to get there. So if you all have written at the top of your sheet now, "What are my lifetime goals?" I have a stopwatch on me, and I'm going to start timing you. And as I time you, I'm going to give you 60 seconds. And during the 60 seconds, I want you to put down. Now, I don't want you to try to be neat, and don't worry about the order that you put them in. You can later, as you get them all scribbled down. This is a brainstorming session. But as you get them down, you can look back and say, "Well, this was one, and that was two." They may not come to you exact the same order as you will figure them out later. But at least get something down on paper. I want you to, for the next 50 seconds, to write down what are your own personal lifetime goals. Go. Hope you have more paper left. Question number two. We're going to get into some activities now. How would I like to spend the next 5 years of my life? We have to assume that we have 5 years more. None of us know whether that's true. When Christ has come, all our goals will either have been achieved or forgotten. We can't take anything with us except the record which is being recorded in heaven as to what we're doing. But now that you've written down your lifetime goals, what do you want to achieve in the next 5 years? Go. coming up to 10 seconds left. Stop, please. Thank you. Now we've done it one more time, and this is the last time I'll ask you. Third question is a different question than the other two. If you realize that you only had 6 months to live, how would you spend the next 6 months? Now, I don't want you to think about financial things. I'm assuming that your will and your insurance and that type of thing is in order. But you now have 6 months to live, and it's quite possible that someone in this room, that's all we do have. We never do know. We know this group will never be here again. This same group will never be in this place again, ever. There'll be some here next year that aren't here today. There'll be some here that are not here this week that will be here next time, if there is another year. But our lives are constantly changing. Christ could very well have come in the next 6 months. But let's assume we have six more months on earth to live. In the health you now have, what are you going to do in the next 6 months? Go. I don't know if you've ever done that before in your life. It's an exercise that can be helpful and help in getting us to keep our balance. Some of the things which seem so important are not so important if you only have 6 months to live. Seeing these goals on paper, seeing the activities that you would want to have in order to achieve these goals on paper, you did this very quickly. This was a brainstorming session. And remember, this is very personal. These were your goals. I can't set your goals. You can't set mine. If your goal was to have a healthier life, activities would be to get more exercise, to eat less sweets, to get adequate rest. If your goal is to be in the kingdom, that was still an interesting thing. I gave Brother Anthony a whole long list of stuff I've done. And I have never in my entire life ever done spiritual dynamics and can't stop the clock at the same time. So these two are kind of dovetailing. This morning we talked about goals, and tonight we're building on that. But they're from two different, total different talks or studies. But of course, I only know one thing. When you only know one thing, you work it to death. But it's quite important, I think, for us to get this down on paper. Now, you can do this again in your own free time, and you can refine it. But if you don't have any goals, you're not going to get there. If you don't have any planned activities to achieve those goals, you won't make it. And so if our goal would be the kingdom, obviously baptism would be included, but Bible reading would be included, prayer would be included, caring for others, extending your hand to someone else, all those kind of things would go to help achieve the goal, which is the kingdom. And if you don't have a goal now, when are you going to get one? How long are you going to wait before you decide where you want to be? Because you won't get anywhere unless you know where you're going. We talked this morning about the fellow with a high hurdle and how that he couldn't win the race without hurdles. You play soccer over here, don't you? Soccer has what's the thing at the end of the field at soccer? Goal. Let's assume that the two championship teams have met for the final championship. The winner takes all. And our way, we come out on the field and everybody practices and they warm up and they do their calisthenics. And then just before the game begins, both teams go back into the locker room and the coach gives them a pep talk, you know, go out and fight, fight, fight for good old alma mater and go, go, go and all this. And the teams are all charged up and they come out on the field and they're ready to have the game and they look at the end of the field. No goal. Someone during that intermission time, while they were back in the locker room, someone's taken away the goal. The stadium is filled with people cheering on their team. The cheerleaders are dancing, and the bands are playing, and there's no goal. And they go to the referee and the umpire and they say, "We can't play the game without goals. We can't win the championship without goals." It's so easy to understand that in sports, isn't it? Just as important in your life. You can't play without goals. You can't win without goals. The one that was handed out to you this morning, I hope, is on your list. I want to be in the kingdom of God more than anything else in all the world. Because if it isn't on your list, it doesn't become your goal, you won't be there. That which you have already, hold fast until I come. And he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations, and he shall rule them with a rod of iron. As the vessels of a potter shall they be broken into shivers, even as I the seed of my father, and I will give unto him, unto you, the morning star.